Hello, welcome to episode 160 of the Vookcast. My name's Stephen, and with me today is my good friend James. What's up?
Nothing much, pal.
We're all so excited that we're recording a podcast for you. Me and James this week, a quiet, intimate moment, I guess. So we're going to do the usual, talk about some news and talk about some games we've been playing. Biggest news probably this week is the Switch sort of had a pretty major update to 4.0.0, as exciting as those numbers are. I guess the biggest feature that stands out for me is video capture has been added to very specific games. So kind of similar to most other consoles, you can, in this case, hold the capture button and it will save the last 30 seconds of footage from when you press it. And it's compatible in Breath of the Wild, Splatoon 2, Mario Kart 8, and ARMS. It's weird that it's only specific games, though.
I didn't know that. It's like every other console now. Woo!
Yeah, so that's what I thought to start.
But that's pretty weird. But I'm assuming it's a first party thing, maybe.
My only guess was that like the game itself has to, I don't know, reserve some part of, like, it has to be recording 30 seconds of footage all the time as part of the game because the Switch doesn't do it by itself. I don't know, it's weird. Right.
I guess since this console is not as, say, you know, meaty under the hood as the Xbox or PS4 is, so maybe that is true. It's something they didn't plan for, which sucks a bit, but...
Yeah, it's probably part of it because, like, the other consoles are so powerful that they can have, like, dedicated hardware off to the side just always recording even if you never use it, and the Switch doesn't really have that.
But Snipperclips is missing, though, if we were thinking about first party only.
Yeah.
But...
No.
I don't know. It's pretty... Like, I mean, I guess Splatoon, Mario Kart, and ARMS are all pretty self-explanatory games that you would want people recording replays of or something.
I think because ARMS just introduced the replay feature like at the same time as well, and they're about 30 seconds worth, so that's pretty convenient.
And like Breath of the Wild is like, you know, one of those, I think, emergent gameplay kind of games, and if weird shit happens, you know, it's a good game you can capture from.
Totally
stuff off, I guess.
And so many times I've played like Mario Kart and just been like, I wish I could have shared what just happened as opposed to a screenshot of something that means nothing to anyone without the context before it.
Yeah, it would be nice though, like for reviews and stuff, if I could get, you know, 30 second snippets of a game that I'm playing throughout the whole game and then just put that together into a video review or something. But
wouldn't that be nice?
That's not going to happen.
Hopefully, I don't know, since it's, I hope that other developers and publishers can implement this in their own games. I'm guessing or hoping that it's like Nintendo have done it because, you know, they've are the only ones known this feature was coming, and maybe in the future other ones can implement it in their own games. I guess we'll find out.
Wait and see, I guess.
I guess there were some other features that came along that are kind of, why weren't they here in the first place? But it's nice that they're here now. So stuff like being able to pre-order stuff on the eShop, which, I mean, if you want to pay money for a thing before it's out, you're welcome to do that. It doesn't say anything about preloading, but... You know,
surely that comes with the package.
You'd hope so. Right? Someone's going to have to pre-order a game and find out. Probably not me either. I'm buying the only game coming up soon is like Mario, and I'm buying that physically. Anyway,
pretty sure. Like, just quickly, the first like result on Google literally says Nintendo eShop pre-purchase and preload FAQ Nintendo support. So
there we go.
It looks like it is a thing. So yeah,
real time problem solving. And you can now also transfer your data across systems, so your save data and your user profile. So if you buy a second Switch for whatever reason, maybe they do an upgrade or a, you know, Switch Mini or something, I guess you can, you know, transfer it over to the new system without worrying about losing all your data, which is nice.
I think like the important thing to talk about here just quickly is I've heard a lot of people who put hundreds of hours into Breath of the Wild and their Switch kind of packed up. No longer turned on or whatever. And because there's no way to back up the save data, people would just be like, I've just got to, like, I can't be bothered sending it to Nintendo. Because I think you could send it to Nintendo previously and they could do something. But obviously in Australia, it's easy to go to a shop and just replace it.
Yeah,
exactly. Receipt or whatever. But, like, I think that's a really big deal for people who might have... I was kind of scared to play a game for too long because, like, what if my Switch just didn't power on? or something one day. Like, I think this is a really, really cool... I know that it's like a basic thing for every other console, but like it's really cool that you can do that on Switch now, and like it's one of the major things I was like kind of had this weird little anxiety about in the back of my head every time I played something. But I think it's great.
Yeah, I totally know what you mean. I think hopefully in the 5 firmware, it would be nice if, as well as being able to transfer to a new system, you could upload to like a save in the cloud or something, especially if we're paying for a service. That'd be a real nice added bonus. So even, you know, if your Switch packs up to the point where you can't even transfer the saves onto another system, at least you've got a backup that way. We can hope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're getting there slowly, I guess.
Eventually. And yeah, another feature that was advertised, but I don't fully understand, is that apparently you can match the version of your software with other local users. I know that in the past, I haven't actually tried it, but I know that you could, if someone had a patch, you could download their version of a patch from them locally. So like you go and, you know, all come together, play Splatoon, one person hasn't updated. I assume you should be able to grab a patch off someone else's machine so that you can get up to date. And I don't fully know what the difference is with this whole match version with local users is. I think maybe it lets you downgrade as well.
Are we like 100% sure that, because I mean, I've never actually had to do this before, but are we like sure this feature isn't that feature? It just wasn't there at launch?
Maybe. I swear I've seen in the settings something about like when you go to download a patch, it'll be like, do you want to download it from the internet or download from a local user or something? But it's been a while since I've looked at it, so maybe
well,
I'm
now
making
you can
that up.
Match from a local user. So, you know.
Yeah.
What age we live in.
Hooray. And yeah, the last thing that we've sort of noticed after it came out, and this wasn't an advertised feature, but it seems like USB audio devices like headsets work with the Switch now. So yeah, I've seen people on Twitter saying that they can just plug in a USB-C to A adapter into the handheld and then it'll work with a USB headset, or you know, similarly with a, say, PlayStation headset where you just plug in a USB receiver and it will just send all the, you know, audio to the headset, which is a nice bonus if you have USB headsets, I guess.
They'll make some. If this is like an official thing and it doesn't disappear, like you can bet there'll be a company making them.
Oh yeah, of course. This would be how much better than that weird like Hori Splatoon octopus mess. Like this would just be perfect.
Yeah, I wonder if this is, I don't know if this is a response to that or not, but I don't know. It's a very... is it officially, like, in the patch notes, or is it just something people discovered?
I think it's just something people discovered. I didn't see it anywhere in the patch notes, and everybody that I saw talk about it was like, hey, this wasn't, you know, mentioned, but suddenly these things work now. So,
yeah. It'll be interesting, I guess, to see if that becomes an official... if that was meant to happen.
It'd suck if they take it out.
Yeah, that would suck. Yeah, but, you know, it's Nintendo.
Yeah. So. They do weird things. Yep. But that's pretty much it for this 4.0 update, unless you know, if there's new icons. If you're sick of the icons that are there, you can now have like a Mario Odyssey Goomba, which is cool, I guess.
I wish they put up more, just lots. Like, I feel like it doesn't take much, you know?
Yeah, I feel the same. Like, there's a lot, but there's, you know, so many things that aren't represented. Why can't I have a Yarn Yoshi or... I don't know. That's just an example because there's a Yarn Yoshi amiibo in front of me. But I'm sure there are many others.
Yes.
Yeah. Cool. That's that. The second piece of... like, I don't know if it's really news. It's sort of a... there's been a couple of pieces of news that have pointed to an interesting factoid that's been happening with Switch games, is that indie games that come out on the Switch as well as other platforms seem to be selling really, really well on the Switch specifically. So for example, pretty recently, Neurovoider, I think Oliver reviewed that for us and had pretty good things to say about it. That supposedly sold more in 1 month on the Switch than it did in like an entire year of its life on Steam, which that seems kind of crazy. And yeah, sort of similar with The Flame and the Flood, that's, you know, had better first day sales on the Switch than it did on any other platform. Any idea why this might be? Any clues?
You're asking me like I know 100%, but I definitely don't.
Do you have any guesses?
I find it interesting that, say, for example, FIFA, I know that's underperforming compared to all the other consoles, although that, to me, that also makes sense. But I think with indie games, like, they're not... I personally would rather play those games when I'm not really wanting to play... Well, this is... No, wait, this isn't making sense.
I think I know where you're going, but continue.
It's not a game that I would sit down to play on my TV. Like, I wouldn't play Binding of Isaac on my TV, for example. That's a bad example because it's probably not selling that well because of the price, but... Yeah, but, like, these are, like, these smaller experiences I would be more likely to play while I'm, say, on a bus or train or in the car or something.
Or in bed.
Not while driving.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, but I don't know. It's just a, like, I think that it's just because it's that, you know, people want to play anywhere and however they want. And, like, if I had the choice to buy it on Xbox One, PS4, or Switch, like, I'd probably pick Switch for Axiom Verge, or, which, well, I did, or, you know, Butcher, or any of the other games that have come out that are indie, so...
I think, yeah, I was kind of similar with indie games back before the Switch. I would always gravitate towards, like, a cross-play PS4 Vita title, because if I was playing... I could play it on a TV if I felt like it, but more than likely I'd, you know, move my save over to the Vita and just play it there. And this is exactly that, just without the annoyance of needing to upload and download saves. So it, yeah, just seems, if I can play it on Switch and it's not noticeably worse than on other platforms, it seems like, why wouldn't I? It just gives me more options of how to play.
Even, yeah, like, Ukulele, like, I'm waiting for that still, because I just don't, like, it's a game that, to me, the graphics aren't going to really change that much between Xbox and, say, Switch, so why wouldn't I pick the version that gives me more options? Like, I can take it out with me or go play it on my lunch break or whatever, so...
Yeah, exactly.
I know the only thing that I, like, back in my head is, you know, Nintendo's account system, but that's getting better anyway, so... I think also... This is probably a little bit more of a controversial statement too, is there's not... I don't think there's as many games on other consoles, so the market is a bit more...
less crowded. You
know, people are probably more willing to buy these indie games because there's nothing... So while they're waiting for Odyssey, for example, whereas someone on Xbox might have just bought The Evil Within or Middle Earth or FIFA, NBA... Well, not FIFA and NBA, but do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
There's just a... I don't know. I think that also will definitely contribute to it. It's just a really good time to release something on the Switch.
There's a lot larger gaps between major releases on the Switch because you're not getting a major release every week. You're getting a major release every month-ish. So you've got, you know, 3 weeks where you can release an indie game with only other indie games as competition. And I think as well, like, especially when you compare it to Steam, like, to me... I don't know, I see so many games, I barely open Steam these days, but even when I do, it's like, there are hundreds of games, I think, coming like on a daily basis, and it's so hard for them to stand out against everything else that's on there, whereas on the Switch, you know, we've got maybe 8 to 10 games a week, so it's still a lot of games, but it's not so much that you lose any of them. You can, you know, look at the list and see if any of them take your fancy without having to sit there for an hour scrolling, so yeah, they just don't get lost.
Yeah, but... And then, you know, once again, why would I buy it on Steam when I can buy it for maybe $5 to $10 more and have the portable version too?
Yeah, exactly.
Also is a thing. Like, Binding of Isaac's probably not the best example because I paid more for that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't know. And it's just something I'm more likely to play it if I can play it anywhere.
Yeah, so, exactly.
Yeah. But I think that's probably about it for this.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't think... Yeah, it's interesting. It's good, though. I love it. And I'm assuming it's easier to get your game on a Switch than, say, Xbox at the moment.
It sounds like it is. Like, I've only been hearing rumblings on Twitter, but supposedly it's easier than Steam to get a game approved on Switch, although I assume Nintendo have a bit more quality control than Greenlight would. But, yeah, it seems, you know, they're doing everything they can to get games on there without it going Wii U eShop garbage, at least. So it's, yeah, working out well.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, yeah, I said the news would be short. That's the news. So rather than take a break, we'll just go straight to talking about the video games that we've been playing.
Bonza.
Beep, 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 beep. This just in, getting an international transmission from Daniel. The transmission's crackling a bit. Here's Daniel. He's coming to us from a foreign land. Hello, Daniel.
I'm a dropout of this thing. G'day, mates.
That doesn't sound very international. Where?
Konbawa.
Where are you?
I'm in the land of the rising sun, Japan.
Oh, well.
Of lots of walking and avoiding all of the crepes and sweets and desserts they have over here.
Have you been surviving in Japan?
Yes, yes, very much so.
Have you been surviving in video games in Japan?
Yes, actually, very much so. Yeah, it's great having a land of video game bars that you go to talk English to people. And it's not like, you know, the one that we used to frequent, we went to twice, Respawn, which is sort of a nightclub, which is like loud noises and some Smash Brothers in the corner. These are like proper retro gaming bars, like Critical Hit Nagoya, where it's just you can sit down and play Kirby's Air Ride for some reason.
Because why not?
That's an insanely expensive game over here. It's like over $100 at every store I've been to.
I've been just like looking for a PAL copy, but it's always so expensive that I never want to spend like $100 on it. It's like,
really?
It's a game I've always wanted to try, but like I don't want to try it for $100 and then find out it's actually as bad as the reviews said back then.
When did that skyrocket? I mean, I was playing with a person and she was like, she considered herself an expert at it. Okay. And I could sort of see the intricacies to it, but it's just still, I don't know.
It's not $100.
It's strange to think it came from Sakurai.
Yeah, that's true.
Actually, maybe that's what I should buy. I should just buy Chibi Robo, instead of spending the exorbitant amount on the PAL version of that.
Sounds like a plan.
So
the main reason we have you calling in is because I hear you've been playing The Flame. Is it The Flame and the Flood or just Flame and the Flood?
The Flame in the Flood.
The Flame in the Flood. There we go.
Yes.
So, I mean, I don't know much about it beyond, like, watching a video review and a trailer yesterday. So it's like a survival-y game in, like, a post-apocalyptic something.
I mean, I don't really know the full story of the game yet. I mean, it's made by a couple of ex-Irrational guys who worked on Bioshock. And it's basically a roguelite adventure. I want to say part Legend of Zelda, part Fallout.
Okay. Well,
like, it's Fallout in the you're just scavenging everything you can find. And then, you know, it's like an isometric Zelda style of view of just exploring these. But like, there's this big flooded area and you've got a raft and a doggo. And
hell yeah.
You get on the raft and then you'll be sailing down this big river and you'll find places to stop at. You get off at a place, you scavenge what you can, you use the items you've scavenged to craft items, food, stuff to survive. Trying to survive is the big challenge because there's like, you know, you could die of starvation, dehydration, fatigue. Animals can kill you. If you're not careful, you can get poisoned by eating something bad. There's all these little sort of bits and pieces all over the place that just try and
it sounds kind of bleak, like almost.
Oh, yeah.
Is it still enjoyable when it's like, I'm not doing things to achieve stuff. I'm literally just doing all this stuff so I don't die of poisoning or bear attack.
Well, there are 10 areas to get through.
Okay.
So I'm guessing there's something at the end of it. I've only gotten up to like the third area before either being killed by a wolf or smashed my little raft into a rock too many times and it sunk.
I do remember reading it. So it's kind of roguish in that if you die, you die and then you start from the top of the river again.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, it's very roguelite. And I mean, I'm playing on the, I guess it's the casual mode that instead of taking all the way back to the beginning, I can start at the last river area I finished. So if I'm up to like the third area, then I can go start back at the beginning of the second area. Just so I don't completely lose my progress. But then again, sometimes you want to restart because you can see errors you've made and here you can do that better, which is, you know, the best part of any rogue.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. It's kind of nice having those shortcuts just as a, oh man, I wish I just don't feel like doing the whole lot all over again, but Yeah, I think the most rewarding stuff comes from, okay, I've absolutely nailed this first area and now I can do it without even trying. I feel like a god.
Yeah. But even then, I've never felt like a god in this game. It's well, the last area I did, I've just sort of did really well with the amount of supplies and stuff I could loot. But then you'll come to something and you're like, oh, great, there's three wolves here. I literally cannot kill any of them. So it's either I can try and get what little resources I can, or, yeah, I'm just going to get out of here and try and get to the next area and try my luck. I mean, I don't know how much longer. There is an endless mode if you want to play it like that. But from what I'm aware, there's only like a limited amount of items you can craft, so I can see it getting a bit repetitive towards the end. But in saying that, like, I haven't even counted bears, or I don't know what other areas there are later on. I haven't fully upgraded my raft to be able to make it steer better and all of that.
I guess on the crafting stuff, do you find, I think crafting in a lot of games is a point where I'll find myself losing interest if the crafting is super, like you have to look up weird manuals to work out what goes with what to make what. Is it kind of reasonably straightforward, or how, how does it work?
It's super straightforward. Like, as soon as you've learned a recipe, it'll tell you, you need these three things for it. And you can always, like, there's only, I think, like a total of 70, around 70-ish items you can craft.
Okay.
So,
and do the items you need to craft stuff kind of make sense in what they make? It's not like, craft this mushroom and a piece of wood to make a boat.
Oh, yeah, completely. They make complete sense. Like,
okay.
You know, there's this one thing I need. It's a spear trap, which you can use to get boars and wolves. And all you need for that, I think, is like two branches and some rope and some flint, I think.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
So yeah, it all completely makes sense, and there's nothing sort of the usual BS that you can see in these type of games. Combat is just like at one point you're able to craft a bow, so you can use that to attack enemies, providing you've got enough arrows, or you can craft these traps, which you do. I mean, you do need to kill, like, if you kill a boar, you can skin it, then you get the meat, and then the boar skin to make clothes, which can protect you from the rain or the temperature. Everything about, I mean, I'm really enjoying it's just something different that there isn't anything really like on the Switch yet.
I think I've a lot of the reviews that I looked into kind of mentioned that the whole survival genre is kind of oversaturated, but I think if you're looking at specifically Nintendo platforms, which I guess some people might, or even if you're looking at stuff that's just not the PC, I feel like the oversaturation hasn't really happened outside of the Steam Greenlight world.
So, yeah, because we don't have like those World War Z's or whatever.
Yeah, like we don't get the million sort of Me Too, I'm going to make a survival game as well. Like, obviously there are some that have stood out, like Don't Starve and stuff, but you know, there's also a whole billion others that never quite were as good as the ones that stood out.
Is Don't Starve on the Switch yet?
Not that I'm aware of.
It's on the Wii U, though, isn't it? I think so.
I'm going to say yes.
Okay. And I mean, the roguelike genre on the Switch is kind of well representative. Like, you've got Binding of Isaac and Tumbleseed and Goner, I think, which is sort of like a good mix of roguelike games. None of them are sort of the same at all. But yeah, I really like this, just for, and like the whole visual aesthetic. The it's got this sort of cool, almost gothic-y 3D polygon look to it. It's hard to explain. And the soundtrack is gorgeous. It's really sort of.
Yeah, actually, on the soundtrack, I'm kind of curious how you enjoy that, because when I was watching one of the trailers, I found that at least some of it was done by Chuck Reagan, who was sort of like a folky acoustic artist that I got into a couple of years ago. And yeah, are you finding it's especially lyrical? Is music with lyrics kind of distracting while you play the game, or is it just sort of nice and backgroundy?
I think it suits the theme well, because the game's sort of presented in this like backwaters American setting. So sort of having this alternative country style just playing is like, oh, this is cool. I'm digging this. Especially if you're just like drifting down the river and then it starts playing, and it just sort of all helps the mood come together. And I guess because country music can have can sound pretty bleak and isolating quite well.
Like from what I've heard on trailers, it doesn't sound like the country music that a lot of people would avoid, like, oh, we're going to go down to the square dance hall sort of stuff. It's more like sort of deep, well, not really deep thoughts, but like just kind of
thoughtful.
Yeah, thoughtful deep. Is what I was thinking of, yeah. Just sort of a nice, relaxing, chill thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that sums up. It's nice and chill and just sort of not intrusive at all.
That's really cool.
It's definitely a game worth picking up. Like I picked this up in Yano, what's that elephant one? But I haven't even started playing that yet.
Yeah, the elephant one.
Because it looked adorable. Because I just saw this and I was just like, you know, I didn't even know about it until it showed up on the Switch coming soon thing a few weeks back, and I just sort of fell in love with the look of it.
It's a little bit, there's a little off topic and we won't talk about this too much, but I found the Switch is with Butcher I played a couple of weeks ago is sort of similar. It's a game that's existed on Steam for a while, like The Flame in the Flood, but I didn't know it existed because it was just on Steam. And now that it's on Switch, it's sort of not crowded by a million other games that are similar, and I'm, oh, this is actually pretty cool.
Well, it's getting there, though.
Getting there, but not quite yet.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you see a lot of, like, the devs for this said, we saw our best first week sales for the Switch version.
Oh, wow, that's really cool. Out of any
of our versions. So I think a lot of these indie developers are finding success on the Switch just because they're not launching in crowded marketplaces.
And I mean, it's I think it's also really suits the platform. Like, PC is obviously your first easiest thing to build for, but when you've got this thing that you can play on a TV at home, you can play it, you know, portably while you're around somewhere else. It's just a nice...
On holiday in your hotel room?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you don't have to bring a laptop with you to play it, which is nice.
And, you know, I don't know if it works the same on PC, but on the Switch, I just press the power button, it goes to sleep mode, and I come back whenever I want.
Yeah, not like that on PC, I don't think.
No. But yeah, it's definitely a solid little game. I should mention there, you do sometimes bump into other people in the game as well, just to sort of...
Okay.
It seems like there is some story about why this has all happened.
Yeah, it seemed like it was all quite mysterious. Like, there's no upfront storyline, but it's sort of, you just encounter little bits and pieces and piece it together as you go through, which is quite appealing to me.
Yeah, kind of like your Metroid games of old.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely one I'd suggest everyone check out.
Cool, no worries. Well, I guess that'll conclude our international correspondent moment.
I'm going to go off to and raiding all the Japanese retro game stores and eating all the delicious the food.
All the delicious what? I feel like you cut food. Out. Our audience needs to know what you're going to eat.
Food. I'm in Osaka at the moment, so okonomiyaki. All of it. And you can't get any. And I couldn't find any decent in Australia. And you just, it's just so good.
Save me some. I know you can't.
No.
But
no.
Cool. Oh, well.
I'll save you some wasabi Kit Kats.
Thank you. But
if anyone's interested, follow my Twitter. I'm posting lots of pictures and stuff there.
And that Twitter is at Worth Nintendo. I'll chuck that in the notes if you're not already following Mr. Daniel Worth Nintendo.
You can see what random things I see at game stores that I try to buy because I don't need them.
All these things tempting your money away.
I really want an Astro Boy Game Boy. I love Astro Boy so much, but I don't need it.
Oh, well. Well, thank you very much for coming along from literally the other side of the world, or at least a long enough way away that it's a bit of effort.
No, more just sort of north a bit. Same side, just, you know.
Across a lot of ocean.
North. Yes.
Cool. Oh, well. Well, I guess now we'll return back to our regular scheduled programming.
Peace out, y'all.
So first I figured we'd start off with, as you mentioned it before, you've been playing a little bit of Axiom Verge on Switch. I'm kind of curious what you think of it, because you are kind of one of the token Metroid people that comes on the podcast, so I'm curious how you feel it compares and, you know, your general thoughts on it.
Have you played it at all?
I have watched someone play it and I've bought it on other platforms. No, it's not the same. So basically my answer is no.
Yep. So I bought XM version, finished it on PS4 for press start a while ago. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like a long time ago. I liked it so much. I was going to buy it on Xbox too, but you can't get it in Australia on Xbox. Ugh, but it's annoying. On Switch. Yeah, because Xbox has some weird thing about with ratings or whatever, but and that's another story.
Yeah.
So I was really happy that it came to Switch because I just think it's really good. And obviously, Samus Returns has kind of reignited my interest, I guess, in Metroid titles. Really waiting for Hollow Knight as well.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be great.
Yeah, I hope so. I've heard it is. So it's basically like it is very much a love letter to Metroid games. But what I really like about Axiom Verge is that it's still its own thing still. Like, it's not kind of copying or even, like, dumbing itself down to the point where it's bland, like, say, Shadow Complex.
Mm.
It's just, you know, like, how every Metroid game kind of gives you a wall jump and, like, a morph ball of some sort, or, like, the Varia suit. Like, all of those power-ups are kind of imitated.
Yeah.
A lot of the Metroid clones. Axiom Verge, like, doesn't really do any of that. Like, it kind of throws all of it out the window and gives you all of these special abilities that are just that fit in with the theme and the setting, and it's very like cyberpunky. It actually reminds me so much of, I don't know if anybody remembers this game, and it's like such an old game. It's on NES. It was called Kabuki Quantum Fighter. It was about,
no, you've lost me, but go on.
it's about like, if you look it up, it's the weirdest. I reckon Daniel will know about it. Like, it's a he's a hacker, and he gets put into a computer system, but in that he's like a kabuki warrior who attacks people with his hair. Like, it's a really weird, cyberpunky, dystopian kind of game where the story is that the computers are going to kill people unless we get in there and delete this virus or something. It's that kind of thing. Axiom Verge has a really cool twist to it. It's about a programmer who's kind of pulled into a program. And because of that, the gameplay kind of ties in with the story. Like, a lot of the weapons are weapons that let you recompile the code of enemies, which changes how they behave.
Yeah, so, actually, like, I remember I've seen in footage, and when I watched someone play, they had, like, a glitch gun or something, which, yeah, made enemies into different things. I guess that's sort of what you were getting at?
Yeah. And I think the thing about Axiom Verge as well is, especially now, more so when it came out, but now, there was this kind of, like, barrage of awful, like, Metroid try-hard games, like that, remember that PS4 Apotheon?
Just, oh, yes.
Terrible. Yeah,
that was no good.
But this is just, like, you know, chucks you into this really, like, kind of almost intimidating, overwhelming, ominous world, and doesn't have a lot of cutscenes, but has, like, a really good story to it. Yeah, I don't know. I think it's a really solid game, and it's nuts to think. I think one guy made this, and crazy. Like, you might see the moment to moment gameplay, and it kind of looks a little bit like whatever. But when you see the boss battles, especially, like, those things are, like, meticulously designed. Like, it's a really solid game that I just can't recommend enough to people who want another Metroid game after having finished, say, Samus Returns.
Yeah, and I think I've been keen on it since it came out, but I still haven't played it because I am me. But I'll probably buy it again on Switch because I don't think I want to play it on Vita if I could be playing it on Switch. So, yeah, I'm going to do that and give this one wonderful developer more money, I guess.
Yeah, there's a cool retail edition as well. I think it's like $70, though, so I don't know if that's really worth it. You do get, like, I think it's a soundtrack, art book, and making of documentary or whatever.
Okay.
I really want to buy it to, like, support it, but I just also, it's just so much money compared to, say, $30 on the eShop, which I think is what it is.
And now, like, also, that would make it the third time you've bought it by the sounds of things.
Yeah, but I don't mind. I don't mind buying the same game multiple times if it's good. Like, you know? And
clearly Axiom Verge is.
I think it's really good. I think some people kind of, you'll probably think when you're first playing it, this is a bit whatever, but, like, persist. Trust me, it's a really good game with a really cool twist. And I really, like, the setting's a bit cliche, but it's still really good. So,
cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I've been playing Butcher, which I had not heard about Butcher until I got given a review code for it. I don't know if you remember a game called Soldat. Not many people do, but do you?
I do remember that. I don't know why I remember that, but I do.
Well, for anyone who doesn't, it was, like, I think back in, like, 2000. 3-ish. I just remember I played it like early high school.
Yes. I'm Googling screenshots and the memories. There's also a picture of like Reaper from Overwatch just shoved in there on Google Images. So
why not?
Don't know the relevance there, but yeah.
But sure. But yeah, like it was a side-scrolling multiplayer twin stick kind of shooter, except rather than twin sticks, you had like your keyboard movement and mouse aiming. And yeah, it was like really fast paced. You'd have like 8, 16 probably people in like a big, almost worms-ish sort of level. You need to sort of run, jump, and shoot each other with a whole bunch of weapons until one of you's alive. But yeah, the reason I bring that up is because Butcher is by the same developer. It's, I think, their first sort of actual commercial game, because Sold Out was just like a freeware thingy. But yeah, it plays fairly similarly, and I was not sure how it would work as a dual-stick game, because Sold Out always seemed so reliant on there being a mouse to aim. But it works, I think, even better on a console with two sticks. So you move around with the left stick, you use the left trigger to jump, so that way you can get to higher areas, right stick to aim, and the right trigger to fire whichever weapon you have selected. And yeah, basically the whole idea of the game is you've got a series of ridiculously, you know, pretty challenging levels. You can set the difficulty whatever you want, but it's very... it wants you to play on a difficult setting, because anything less than like the standard setting is like called casual. So you've got casual and then like hard, impossible, ridiculous.
You know? It looks a bit like Doom-ish.
Yes, yeah. It's super like Doom, Quake, kind of when PC games were even more edgy than they are now, like in that sort of 90s, we're all going to be full of heavy metal and gore and horrible, like
fucking
hell
blood.
Hell yeah, fucking yeah, get me blood and Satan all over the place. It's totally exactly like that. And yeah, it's sort of 2D pixel art, but it still, yeah, really has that sort of low res ultra gore aesthetic and you know, fairly thumping industrially sort of soundtrack. And I don't know, I kind of liked that quite a lot. It was like going back to being an edgy teenager again, which was kind of fun. But yeah, the whole thing, it's set up around a whole bunch of levels, and each one probably takes you maybe 1, 2, 3 minutes if it's particularly long. But you won't beat that level the first time, because they're, you know, essentially each time you play it, you work out better of how to approach each situation. You might have 1 or 2, maybe 3 sort of fights that you'd have to get through to get to the end of the level. Basically, you are a robot sent from the future to exterminate every human that exists so that Earth can explode. And yeah, you just sort of go through each level killing every single person, and they kill you, and you get better and better at it.
Like enemies, there's no like, say, boss battles or like key moments or anything like that?
Not really. There's like different enemies will pop up throughout the game, and sort of you'll see a new one for the first time and need to learn how to deal with it. But as far as major boss battles, not really, aside from the very end, there's like one boss battle. But yeah, not really aside from that. Yeah, it reminded me a little bit of Hotline Miami in a way, especially there was a twin stick shooter, which helped. But like you get in that same sort of loop where you've got this music that just gets you into a sort of a trancey sort of state. You're going in trying to kill everything that moves, and you die. Well, you don't die as easily as you do in Hotline Miami, but you can still, you know, die pretty easily if there's a whole mob of people trying to shoot you. And yeah, you got that whole repetitive, you lose, but you go straight back in because you're in a trance and you keep doing it until you win. And it feels really great when you beat a level. And yeah, that's basically Butcher. I don't really...
How long does it last?
I think it's not terribly long.
And how much is it?
I think it's about $15 on the eShop. I'll have to double check that and chuck it in the show notes. But I think it's around $15. And in the end, the game time for me was about two and a half hours. But I think that only counted the successful... like the successful level, so it doesn't really count the, you know, the 10, 20 tries that I got until I got there. But I think it was maybe, I think my Switch says I'm about 4 or 5 hours all up. So it's right. Not super long, but I don't know. It's the kind of game where if you wanted to get more out of it, you could quite easily just turn up the difficulty one more notch and start again. And I feel like I'd still have almost as much fun doing it that way. But yeah, that's Butcher, unless you had any other questions.
Not really. The art looked really crap, and I was a bit like, oh, doesn't really look that good. When you tell me you're reviewing it, I was like, oh.
Yeah, I remember that. I don't know, it's just so fast and fluid that the graphics don't matter so much, and they almost kind of, they evoke that old DOS-era PC thing that I kind of got a little bit nostalgic for anyway. It's very, very nihilistic. When you shoot people, like, they'll still have their weird screams of agony while they're dying on the ground, and they'll explode in masses of gore. And it's kind of similar to Super Meat Boy in that the gore stays there, so even if you've tried the level 20 times, like, you'll come into a room fresh and it'll be still covered with the viscera of the hundreds of people you killed in it and in your previous tries. It's very, very intense visually. But yeah. So yeah, I liked it. I'd say that if you are not put off by that aesthetic and you enjoyed the kind of gameplay in Hotline Miami, I'd say it's worth a go. Yeah, I think I liked it on Switch more than I would have on PC. But yeah, that's Butcher, I think.
Did you play it? So just double check as well, because one thing I found really, really I didn't like about a game, say, like Binding of Isaac, is I'd felt the Joy-Con sticks were kind of shit for dual-stick shooters, I should say. Did you play with Joy-Cons? Or?
Yeah, I played it in handheld, and it was... I'll admit that it was better on with the Pro Controller, but I don't think it was much worse with the Joy-Cons. I guess I still think you could, with practice, you'd still be able to get just as good as you would be with the Pro Controller. It's just harder to play for longer periods of time without your hands getting, sore holding the Switch up and with a sort of more cramped position. But yeah, I don't think it's much worse.
That's a personal opinion, I guess.
Yeah, of course.
I don't know. I just don't like. I don't know what it is. I just don't like the Joy-Con sticks.
It's weird.
I don't know. They just feel a bit weird, and especially after the Pro, like, it's very hard.
I know what you mean. It's kind of like a halfway point. This is a little off topic, but a little bit of a halfway point between, like, Vita sticks and real sticks. They still have that, it feels like a reduced range of motion.
Yeah, Vita sticks. That's what it's like. No, you're right. I forgot about them. Yeah.
Like your center to outer of the stick is sort of less distant, so it's harder to be more exact with analog. But I found it worked pretty well. So yeah, give that a go if you're interested. Check out, I've got a review for it up on the side if you want more nuanced opinions on it. But yeah, unless you had any other things you wanted to bring up to finish up with, I guess we'll finish off a nice quick episode of this podcast. So that'll be us for episode 160 of the Bookcast. I've been Stephen. If you're interested in my ramblings, you can find me at Stephen Impson on Twitter and all the other social things. If you want to find James, he is at Jams, at ATJAMZ. I tried to do that to save you the hassle of trying to explain it all the time.
I almost want to change it because it's so hard to explain on these things, but
But it's so good and meta.
My brand.
I like it.
Very meta, yeah.
Check us out on vooks.net, vid. That's like books, but with a V. We've got reviews going up there. I'm working on one for Oxenfree at the moment. I'm not sure. Are you working on anything for Vooks at the moment, James?
I am going to have something up soon on an indie game. But,
cool.
Maybe.
Well, look.
I don't want to commit. I don't want to commit just in case I don't get it done.
Fair enough. Yeah. Well, possibly, maybe look forward to something indie from James.
Something from me, yeah.
In the immediate-ish future, maybe, possibly. But yeah, otherwise, we'll be back a little bit earlier than normal because we're going to be doing a live PAX recording of the next podcast. So, a couple of us are going to be at PAX and we've managed to secure a recording session there. So there'll be another one next week instead of having to wait a whole 2 weeks for the next episode. But until then, I hope you all have a good day, a good evening, and a happy time. Catch you later.
Bye.